You know, it's I've always really enjoyed nature. I mean, I've always loved it, and I've always loved looking at the night sky. A few weeks ago, I was fishing, and it was kind of funny because I had gone fishing, and I got back to the truck, and when I got to the truck, I realized I had locked my keys in the truck, and I had to hike maybe a mile and a half to get to cell phone reception, which wasn't too bad. And I called Becky, and Becky sweetly came and rescued me. And I walked back to the truck, and I remember just lying on the hood of the truck, looking up at the night sky, and just being overwhelmed with a sense of God's incredible goodness and bigness. And it brought back so many memories. When I was, I don't know, some of us are not in those really formative years, but I don't know about you, but for me, the memories from my kind of late teens, the experiences from my late teens, have a very powerful influence on my life. Do you guys kind of, can anybody here identify with that? It's like there's like a special strength to the memories of your late teens. So here I am, 18 years old. As soon as I graduated from high school, I put everything I owned into the back of my car and I drove to Wyoming. And just to be truthful, I pitched my tent in the city park and started my new life as an adult, right? At my graduation, my father, he's so funny, he took a plate out and he broke the plate with a hammer. And he was saying, "You're 18, kid, there's no more free lunch." And sometimes people say, I can see you, some of you have a look of horror, but don't be horrified. My dad is a very loving dad and he's given me many meals since then. But but he was sending the message, "You're a man now. Go be a man. Seize the day. Conquer the world," right? So that's what I did. And I remember standing up in the Wind River Mountains at 18 years old, 9,000 feet, and just looking up at the sky. I had bought a little telescope. Actually, it wasn't that little. Nothing like Eden's, but I bought a telescope at a yard sale. And I remember gazing up at the full moon through that telescope. And I was a confused kid at that time. When I say I was confused, I mean, most people would have thought I was a pretty decent guy. You know, they would have thought I was friendly and nice. But really, I was a wreck. I was wrestling with the biggest questions there are to wrestle with. Questions about the existence of God. Questions about my purpose and my destiny and what God was trying to do. And those were big questions because pretty much I was an atheist. I mean, that's what I called myself, but here I am looking up at the sky, thinking I'm an atheist, calling myself an atheist, and yet wondering about God. I don't know about you. When you look at the night sky, do you wonder about God? It's interesting, there are no atheistic cultures in the world. I mean, there are atheistic people, but there are no atheistic cultures. Every culture has looked up at the night sky and has seen in the night sky something bigger than humanity, something that calls forth this, Reformed Christians call it, is this sensus divinitas. Is that a new word for you? Yeah, it's kind of a new word for me too. But it's this internal sense of the existence of God. Every culture on the planet has experienced it. Psalm 19 says this, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech, They use no words, no sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the end of the world. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun. It's interesting. He says, the stars, they don't say anything, and yet they say something. And their speech goes to everywhere. Everybody knows in their heart that there's a God. All cultures agree on the existence of God, but there's something they don't agree on, and that is, what is that God like? What is his character? Is he good? Is he loving? Is he kind? Is he angry? Is he distant? What is he like? There's tremendous lack of agreement on that question. Now, the story Christians tell is this story that Jesus answers that question. Jesus answers that question, and here's what the Bible says. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. All right, so I want you to think about this. When you're standing there and you're looking up at the vast expanse of the sky and you sense that smallness that you are, when you, in fact, just for some of you nerds out there, our galaxy, the Milky Way, is 120,000 light years across. Now, I want you to think about this. Our galaxy, it's 120,000 light years across. That means it takes a particle of light that starts here, it will take it 120,000 light years to go from one end of our galaxy to the other. Now, this is where it gets incredible. Our galaxy is in a neighborhood with 27 other galaxies that are similarly sized. Now, here's where it gets really fascinating. All of the galaxies, how many are there? They estimate about 10 trillion. Okay? About 10 trillion. So our little galaxy is 120,000 light years across. It's just one galaxy, and they estimate there are about 10 trillion galaxies. And they estimate that there's about 100 billion stars in each of those 10 trillion galaxies. So if you want to know how many stars there are approximately, you multiply 100 billion by 10 trillion. I tried that on my calculator, and it gave me kind of some weird language that I'm not educated enough to understand. It's like a very... big. So whether you are a Hindu in India or a Muslim in Iran or a Catholic in Brazil or a Seventh-day Adventist in Sonora, when you look up at the night sky and it calls forth in you this sense that there is a God, that there is something greater beyond us, and then the question comes, who is this God? It's like Paul in the book of Acts. He was there and talking to some Greeks, and they had a sign. It was a shrine to the unknown God. And what Colossians says is this: the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. Who God is has been definitively answered. by the coming of Jesus Christ. Who that infinite God is, that God, I remember back when I was a kid looking at the stars and wondering, who is God? What is God? Is there a God? All of those questions have been definitively answered by the coming of Jesus Christ. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in Him all things were created, things in heaven and things on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through Him and for Him. The question of who is God has been answered. It has been answered in the face of Jesus. Jesus is the revelation of the heart and character of God. He is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. Now, this is really an important statement here. Jesus is the firstborn from among the dead. I have been to many funerals. Kind of goes with the territory. Been to many funerals. I have never in my life gone to a funeral and received a phone call 3 days later and saying and have somebody say on the phone, hey, I'm really, really sorry that we made you go through all of that suffering and all of that mourning and all of that crying because the dead person is now alive. Never had that experience. Anybody here have that experience? The early Christians, they spent time with Jesus. They saw Jesus on the cross. They saw Jesus stabbed with the spear. They saw blood and water pour out of His side. They heard Jesus cry out, my God, why have You forsaken Me? They saw Jesus' body placed in the tomb. They saw the stone rolled across the tomb. They went home and prepared funeral spices for His body. Let's just say it this way. Lots and lots and lots of people saw Jesus die. And 3 days later, the word begins to spread that Jesus, who was dead, is now alive. And at first, people were skeptical, and at first, people questioned and wondered, and yet more and more people began to see Him, and more people began to spend time with Him, and at one time, there were more than 500 people that were talking and seeing and interacting with Jesus alive. Now, I want you to think about this. Would that be a life-transforming experience? That would be a life-transforming. And in fact, it made these people begin to wonder, who was this? I mean, originally they thought He was a prophet. They thought He was a teacher. They thought all kinds of, yeah, He's a wonder worker. But once they saw Jesus alive, they saw in Him as something much more than a prophet and teacher and as a wonder worker. They saw in Him the revelation of God. And that's what Paul is saying. Jesus is the image of the invisible God. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything He might have supremacy. For God was pleased to have all His fullness dwell in Him. Wow. I'll tell you, when I look at the night sky and I'm overwhelmed with the bigness of it, and my heart is called out to know this incredible God that made everything, to think that who He is not a mystery. Who He is has been plainly revealed in the coming of Christ. Wow. Now, this is where Paul goes, through him, to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of evil behavior. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death. I want you to think about this for a moment. Here is this incredible, infinite, illimitable, awesome God that people all around the world, they feel that he must be there. There must be something more than just molecules in motion. There must be something there. And Paul comes and the Christians come and they say, Jesus is that awesome, illimitable, infinite God. He has come and made himself known. And now check this out. Once you were alienated. You guys know the feeling of alienation? I mean, we know that feeling, that sense of alienation with God, right? I mean, you live your life and things happen in your life. You make choices, you make decisions. And in fact, it's interesting. Notice what he says. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies, where were we enemies? Where does it say? Go ahead and say it, church. In your minds. Wow. We are alienated from God and enemies in our minds. God is not angry with us. God is pursuing us. But we are enemies in our minds, and we are enemies in our minds because of what? Your evil what? Behavior. It is our evil behavior that makes us feel in our hearts and minds that we are estranged from God. And when we are in this condition, and by the way, I don't know about you, but I find it easy to go into this kind of place. Whether it's my thoughts, my words, actions. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death. So here we see this story, you guys. There's this infinite, incredible God that people all around the world acknowledge exists, and yet there's all this confusion about who he is, and the story of Jesus says, this is who God is. And I want you to think about this now. At the moment humanity was murdering God, let that sink in. At the moment humanity, God shows up, you know? God shows up. And at the moment God shows up and humanity decides to murder him, it is at that moment that he is extending reconciliation to his murderers. Did you catch that? That's who God is. God is so passionate about you. Yeah. When I'm standing up in the Wind River Mountains and I'm looking at the night sky and I'm overwhelmed that there must be a God and he must be big and he's amazing, but what's he like? And then we zoom down to the story of Jesus, and this is what he's like. If we were to be pounding nails into his flesh, if we were to be placing upon his head a crown of thorns, if we were to be whipping him with a cat of nine tails, if we were to plunge a spear into his side, he would take that very violent action and use that as the very moment that he is bringing about reconciliation between us and himself. That's the kind of person the infinite creator God has shown himself to be. So what have you done with your life? Have you wrecked it all with your sin? Jesus has reconciled you. Now check this out. Now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you what? Go ahead and say it together. To present you what? Holy in his sight. Wow. Can you imagine? You, okay, with all your crazy thinking, right? Me, with even crazier thinking than you. All of my brokenness, all of my sin, all of that, and through Christ's death, I am presented before God, holy. Without blemish. And the last one, free from accusation. Wow. Holy, without blemish, free from accusation. Wow. I mean, church, you know, it's interesting. There are some professions when you have a problem, the person can fix it, right? You got a plumbing leak, you call the plumber comes and he fixes your leak, right? Generally speaking, you have an earache, you go see your doctor, the doctor gives you medicine, you get better, right? There are a lot of professions where you can go to the person and they can do something for you. People come to me all the time, tell me their problems, there's absolutely nothing I can do for them. I can't fix anyone's problems. All I have to offer is a relationship with the infinite God of the universe at the most intensely intimate level imaginable. Which to me is incredible. Right? When I say all I have to offer, I mean that's a lot. Because this God has basically said, not basically, this God has said, look, I don't hold your sin against you. Whatever it is, I don't hold it against you. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. God knows what it is. I don't hold it against you. You can come before my presence. You can be presented holy, without blemish, totally free from accusation. That's the kind of person that God is. Here's the condition. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, and do not be moved from the hope held out in the gospel. That's it. The infinite God of the universe has revealed himself in Jesus. What's he like? He's the kind of God who takes our murder of himself as an opportunity to bring reconciliation between us and God. And you can be holy and blameless without any accusations before that God on one condition. You keep continuing in faith. And don't let anything shake your hope in that awesome God. So this is what I have to offer you today, friends. This is it. I'm offering you a relationship with the infinite God of the universe, When you look up at the stars and you see how magnificent it is, when you drive into Yosemite Valley and you're overwhelmed with the beauty of creation, I am offering you an opportunity to know that God in the most intimate way possible, because he has revealed himself in Jesus Christ. In Jesus Christ, God has said, I am so committed to you that even if you were to nail me to the cross, I will use that as my opportunity to bring about our reconciliation. That's how committed I am to being with you. And you can be in my presence in spite of the fact that you're responsible for my murder. In spite of that fact, you can be in my presence holy, without blemish, and free from accusation.